This is Taking Aim with
Rev Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, July 1st, 2003. Imagine being hit on the head and finding yourself dazed, but still fully conscious. A chain is attached to one of your legs, and you're hoisted upside down. As you lash out in terror, gigantic clippers are used to snip off the lower parts of your legs and arms. Completely helpless, you feel cuts into your thighs, belly, and sides. Your skin is stripped from your legs to your neck. Even with the skin peeled back all the way up to your head, you are conscious enough to struggle. Atrocities like these are happening to countless animals every day in United States slaughterhouses. This is a portion of the text of a full-page advertisement that appeared in the New York Times in 2001, placed by the Humane Farming Association. A vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species, is our Taking Aim program today. Ralph?
This program is dedicated to Michael Bernsweiss, who has been our Jiminy Cricket, our conscience, prodding us, constantly reminding us of the association between the torment of animals and the exploitation and oppression within the human species. It is dedicated as well to the memory and the example of Henry Spira, the merchant seaman and revolutionist of the Socialist Workers' Party, who was the first organizer, inspirer, and strategist for the animal rights movement in the United States. Throughout human prehistory and historical record, the torment and victimization of individuals, of groups, of classes, of nations have produced a movement of people for a rectification of wrong. It gave rise to the consciousness of the need for codes and for a moral sensibility that could challenge perceived injustice and the experience of harm. And yet, within our own experience as a species, there has been an indecent exceptionalism, an exceptionalism that has permitted the most relentless and unimaginable cruelty to every form of life except our own, and that in the name of a presumptive hegemony over other living creatures, the denial of their sensibilities, of their capacity for pain, for their possession of emotion and of consciousness itself. And there is an extraordinary parallel between this treatment of other species and ways in which we have tormented our own. In that regard, one of the most important studies and books on this subject, Comparison, Human and Animal Slavery by Marjorie Spiegel, draws an eerie and compelling and overwhelming parallel between the ways in which we deaden our senses and deny the realities of existence for others, in one-to-one analogy between slavery itself and the treatment of animals. And this book, with a long introduction, an important introduction by Alice Walker, opens with the poem of Paul Laurence Dunbar, the African-American poet and the son of two runaway slaves who lived from 1872 to 1906. The poem, "I Know What the Caged Bird Feels, Alas." When the sun is bright on the upland slopes, when the wind stirs soft through springing grass, and the river flows like a stream of glass, when the first bird sings and the first bud opes, and the faint perfume from its chalice steals, I know what the caged bird feels. I know why the caged bird beats his wing till its blood is red on the cruel bars, for he must fly back to his perch and cling when fain would be on the bough a swing. And the pain throbs in the old, old scars, and they pulse again with a keener sting, and I know why he beats his wing, and I know why the caged bird sings, ah me, when his wing is bruised and his bosom sore, when he beats his bars and he would be free. It is not a carol of joy or glee, but a prayer that he sends from his heart's deep core, but a plea that upward to heaven flings, and I know why that caged bird sings. And so does this book parallel the existence of torment and cruelty and denial of experience of pain and entitlement between humans enslaving each other and the perpetual torment inflicted upon animals. And we will return to the dreaded comparison. But first, let us examine the meaning of torment and slaughter.
In 1996, in the United States alone, over 8 billion animals were killed for food. This figure has risen to 10 billion today. Among those innocent victims were 8 billion meat chickens, 407 million egg chickens, 409 million turkeys, 101 million pigs, 37 million, 22 million ducks, 7 million calves for veal. Now, this figure does not include the 300,000 horses who were slaughtered each year in the United States for export to Europe and Asia for human consumption, nor does it include the 300 million male chickens who are killed at birth because they are not going to lay eggs. It also doesn't include the millions and millions of fish harvested from the sea, and the 300,000 cetaceans, the whales, the dolphins, and other cetaceans who were killed as a result of fishing industry through being caught in nets. Now, in 1973, on April 5th, 1973, an important article appeared in the New York Review of Books. Animal Liberation, it was entitled, and it was written by Peter Singer. As a result of reading this article, Henry Spear, who had been involved in the civil rights movement and had been an author, a reporter for the Militant, the publication, the newspaper of the Socialist Workers' Party, he had read it, and this is what he wrote in response. I had no inkling of animal welfare as a political issue, but I soon began to wonder about the appropriateness of cuddling one animal while sticking a knife and fork into others. It was then that I came across Peter Singer's essay. Singer described a universe of more than 4 billion animals being killed each year in the USA alone. Now, that's 4 billion in 1973, and as I mentioned before, it's now 10 billion animals. Their suffering is intense, wrote Henry Spira. Widespread, expanding, systematic, and socially sanctioned. And the victims are unable to organize in defense of their own interests. I felt that animal liberation was the logical extension of what my life was all about, identifying with the powerless and the vulnerable, the victims dominated and oppressed. Ralph?
The House by Gail Eisnitz, which is a meticulous and stunning and numbing setting forth of what the daily and constant treatment of animals actually entails,
It was reviewed by Alex Hirschaft, who is the president of an organization called FARM, who's had 25 years working on behalf of farm animal issues. Ralph?
Now, in that review, Alex Hirschaft described the biomedical research laboratories, the factory farms, the slaughterhouses, what he calls the faceless compounds where our society conducts its dirty business of exploiting, abusing, and killing innocent feeling beings. These are our Dachau's, our Buchenwald's, our Birkenau's. And like the good German burgers, we have a very fair idea of what goes on, but we don't want a reality check. We rationalize the killing. We say it has to be done. We pretend it is done humanely. We fear that the truth would offend our sensibilities and even force us to do something. And then in this review, he quotes as follows. The agony starts when the animals are hauled over long distances under extreme crowding and harsh temperatures. Here is an account of workers assigned to unloading pigs. In the winter, the hogs come all frozen to the sides of the trucks. They tie chains around them and jerk them off the walls, leaving chunks of hide and flesh behind. They may have a little bit of life left in them, but the workers throw them on the piles of the dead. They die sooner or later. At the slaughterhouse, the animals are too injured to walk, and others refuse to go quietly to their deaths. Here's how they are dealt with. The preferred method of handling a cripple is to beat him to death with a lead pipe before he gets into the chute. If you get a hog into a chute that's had the shit prodded out of him and has a heart attack or refuses to move, you take a meat hook and hook it into his bunghole, his anus, and the meat hook rips out of the bunghole. I've seen the thighs completely ripped open. I've seen the intestines come out of the live animal. And here's what awaits the animals on the kill floor. The testimony of a horse slaughterhouse worker. You move so fast you don't have time to wait till the horse bleeds out. We skin him as they bleed. A horse's nose is down in the blood, blowing bubbles as he suffocates. Another worker on the cow slaughter. The skinner finds the cow is still conscious when he slices the sides of their heads and starts kicking wildly. If that happens, the skinner shoves a knife into the back of the head to cut the spinal cord. This paralyzes the animal, but does not stop the pain of being skinned alive. On calf slaughter. To get done with them faster, we put 8 or 9 of them in the knocking box at a time. You start shooting, the calves are jumping, they're all piling on top of each other. You don't know which ones got shot and which did not. They're hung anyway, and down the line they go, wriggling and shrieking to be slaughtered while fully conscious. And on pig slaughter. When the hog is conscious, it takes a long time for him to bleed out. These hogs get up to the scalding tank, hit the water, and they start kicking and screaming. There's a rotating arm that pushes them under. There's no chance for them to get out. We don't know if they burn to death before they drown, but they're conscious of it all, and it takes them a couple of minutes to stop thrashing.
Eleanor Kennelly, an organizer with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, reported, quote, "A meatpacking plant is like nothing you've ever seen or could imagine. It's like a vision of hell." The beef, the poultry, and the hog industry workers are among the most exploited, the most inhumanely treated workers. Safety is a problem for the workers. They operate sharp instruments. They stand on slippery floors with the blood and gore. They're surrounded by conscious animals kicking for their lives and pressed for speeding slaughter time. Indeed, 36% of all packing workers incur serious injuries. It's the most hazardous job in America. The workers who are disabled complain about the working conditions, but frequently little is done about it. Nowadays, undocumented aliens are brought from Mexico and from other countries to replace the workers who refuse to work under these conditions.
This has always been the common and the shared experience, the exploitation of the worker and the torment of the animals. Indeed, I have to tell the story, the account of my father, who in his stateless condition was working in the slaughterhouses of Montevideo. And as he went up the conveyor belt with the tormented animals onto the upper floor, where the men were wearing hip boots, and he and his colleague, his comrade, who was a worker from India, were slogging around in the guts and the gore, when my father, out of his peripheral vision, saw his friend lose his footing and slip. In the center of this vast second floor was a hole, and beneath the hole were the grinding pits. And into that pit fell my father's co-worker. And he ran to the foreman shrieking, and the foreman looked at him and said, "Corned beef." They ground that man right up. They estimated that he would have been dead anyway, and it would have taken too long to stop the machinery. Ground him right up with the animals that were being slaughtered and killed. And indeed, the work takes an emotional toll on the workers, as described by Eisnitz. "I've taken out my job pressure," she quotes a worker, and my frustration on the animals, on my wife, on myself, with my heavy drinking. It gets worse. With an animal who pisses you off, you don't just kill it. You blow the windpipe. You make it drown in its own blood. You split its nose. I cut its eyes out. The hogs would just scream. Once I sliced off the end of the hog's nose, the hog went crazy, and I took a salt brine and ground it into the nose. Now that hog really went nuts." Unquote. Safety is the primary problem for workers who operate sharp instruments. They stand on a floor slippery with blood and gore, surrounded by conscious animals kicking for their lives and pressed by a speeding slaughter line. 36% incur serious injuries, making their work the most hazardous in America.
Pork Power. Pork Power was the title of a CBS expose that appeared on 60 Minutes, September 19, 1997, and was replayed on June 22, 2003, 1 week ago. Correspondent Morley Safer reported about conditions in North Carolina. Tobacco had once been the number one crop in North Carolina, but it's been replaced by hogs, and now the hog industry is a $1 billion industry in North Carolina. At any given moment, North Carolina houses 10 million hogs in barns as large as football fields on huge industrial farms. Their future? 160 days of life before slaughter. 165 days. These real-life babes, referring to the movie, the famous movie that was nominated for Academy Awards, see no sun in their limited lives, according to Morley Safer. No hay to lie on, no mud to roll in, and they do not talk. The sows live in tiny cages, so narrow they can't even turn around. They live over metal grates. Their waste is pushed through slats beneath them and flushed into huge pits. In fact, North Carolina has become one vast toilet. These are cesspools, not lagoons, that contain the excrement. It holds 9.5 million tons of hog manure that's produced in North Carolina every year. You can't spray that much manure over the fields of North Carolina. They just won't absorb it all. The result? The poisoning of the groundwater and the contamination of drinking wells. In North Carolina, people depend in the rural areas upon these wells for their safe drinking water. But today, you have hazardous industrial waste, according to Larry Cahoon, a scientist at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Hazardous industrial waste, germs, bacteria, viruses such as flu virus, protozoan, various worm-type parasites. The state toxicologist in North Carolina said that 30% of the wells tested near the hog farms are already contaminated. The largest pork producer in the world, Wendell Murphy, was a North Carolina state senator for 10 years. He's also responsible, many say, for creating the dozens of laws that protect the pork industry, protect this pollution, protect this contamination of the state of North Carolina and the people within it. And the part owner of the farm owned by Wendell Murphy is none other than North Carolina's U.S. Senator Lotch Faircloth. He chairs a subcommittee on the environment. He also owns a $19 million stake in the hog business. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. The Movement for Humane Farming gave a detailed report on what factory farming, which is the dominant form of food production in the United States, as it is in other societies, what it really entails. Every time you order a hamburger or a cheeseburger, you are contributing to the horrors below, as the report states. They quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, quote, "You've just dined, and however scrupulously the slaughterhouse is concealed in the graceful distance of miles, you are involved, and there is complicity." A USDA employee contacted the Humane Farming Association and gave them a detailed account. Animals at the plant, red-skinned while fully conscious. Investigations confirmed that not only were these reports accurate, but the animals were routinely dragged, strangled, beaten, scalded, and dismembered alive. The reason these things are happening is factory farming. Since the post-war in this country, post-Second World War, the family farm has been replaced by huge operations run by major corporations. The biggest move has been in slaughterhouses that kill at a rate of 1,100 animals per hour. One worker is required to kill an animal every 3 seconds, and slowdowns in the assembly line are not tolerated.
But, Ralph, whether it's on a factory farm or a family farm, the slaughter is slaughter of these living, thinking, feeling creatures.
Without any question, Maya, and indeed, as you say, whether it's with an axe, with a knife to the carotid artery, the death and the agony is real. But the systematic assembly line, factory-like, massive butchery of animals in their hundreds of millions, indeed in their billions, with torment as the defining feature, analogous to the Auschwitzes and the Birkenaus and the Maidenecks, is the feature of capitalist industrial production of so-called food. Slowdown in the assembly line is not tolerated. The animals are not able to reach unconsciousness. Rarely does the equipment work properly, the report continues. Workers pound away at cows' heads to beat them unconscious, and they repeatedly shock pigs. To avoid slowdowns, the animals are shackled, hoisted, skinned, dismembered while alive. The investigations revealed the downed animals, those too weak to move, are beaten with lead pipes and dragged and strangled to the kill area with cables, saws, blowtorches are used on the live animals, their legs are caught in chutes and trucks, the workers routinely skin their heads, bellies, sides, rumps, they remove their legs, their ears, their horns, their tails, they begin eviscerating the cattle while they are alive. The report continues. Animals with their legs caught in holding pens are dragged with hooks, and you hear the bones breaking. And these statistics do not include the chickens, who are exempt from any nominal coverage by any animal act. They are regularly starved. Their heads and legs are cut off without anesthesia. They are immersed in scalding tanks while alive. The pigs are immersed in scalding tanks to loosen their bristles over 140 degrees. They are transported on the backs of trucks at sub-freezing temperatures. The animals on the rails of the trucks routinely freeze to the sides of their trunks. The workers use chains to rip them off, leaving chunks of their flesh stuck to the truck. To keep the line moving, workers jab meat hooks into their mouths and anuses and drag them. They run them over with tractors. They cut their noses and eyes out of live pigs. The environmental impact is overwhelming. 1 pound of meat requires 2,500 gallons of water. A large chicken factory goes through 100 million gallons of water a day. The number of animals in the U.S. raised for food produce 68,000 pounds of manure per second, 130 times as much fecal matter as the entire human population, and the report goes on.
In fact, Ralph, 14,000 chickens are slaughtered every minute in the United States and 90,000 cows and calves every 24 hours. Now, what this means, this intensified compaction of animals within these industrial food companies, it means that animals get sick, they kill each other, and so chickens at birth, soon after birth, are de-beaked. And in order to prevent disease, antibiotics are routinely put in the animal feed. The proportion of antibiotics that are used in animal agriculture is 40%. The proportion of these antibiotics that are used to promote rapid growth is 80%. And these antibiotics find themselves to people. And as a result, what's happened is that people are becoming resistant to many antibiotics. The other factor of the intensive condition is that pigs, for instance, in the United States, who have pneumonia at the time of slaughter, the percentage is 70%. And the primary source of Campylobacter is contaminated chicken flesh. The people who become ill in the United States with Campylobacter poisoning every day is more than 5,000 people. Now, American turkeys sufficiently contaminated with Campylobacter also cause illness. And 90% of the turkeys are contaminated with Campylobacter. Again, Americans become sickened from eating salmonella-tainted eggs. In California, for instance, there were reports in the Los Angeles Times many years ago that one out of four chickens was contaminated with salmonella. And the number of Americans who are sickened each year from salmonella-tainted eggs, more than 650,000 people. Of these, the people who die, 600. Now, the increase in salmonella poisoning between 1976 and 1986 was 600% because of this intensive factory farming. Another disease, leucosis, which is chicken cancer. 90% of U.S. chickens are infected at the time of slaughter. So those of you who think that by not eating beef and instead eating chicken, you are having safer food, be forewarned by these statistics.
Actually, Maya, the treatment of chickens, as with hogs and with other creatures, is beyond imagination. They are confined in cages where they cannot move a muscle. Their beaks are cut off without anesthesia, of course, to prevent them from pecking themselves and pecking each other out of despair and out of hysteria. The animals are tormented in this fashion. They never move from day one to day final. The chickens were the first farm animals to be permanently confined in such large numbers in automated systems. The chickens, which were raised in towns and villages and farms in back lots, are now condemned to this industrialized factory system in which they never have a waking moment that is free of confinement from birth to death. Chickens, turkeys, ducks, domestic game fowl, guineas, peasants, pigeons, confined by the thousands in stressful, densely packed cages, permeated with excrement in the form of accumulated droppings, excretory ammonia fumes, disease inevitable. Hundreds of millions of chickens, leaking yellow pus, stained by green feces, contaminated by harm bacteria, marred by lung and heart infections, cancers, tumors, and skin conditions, are bred and are shipped and become food in that condition. Despite this, domestic consumption of poultry and eggs products continues, with the result in more and more areas of the country are despoiled as the poultry complexes multiply. The broiler chickens and turkeys at slaughter are not stunned, but are immobilized with painful electric currents. The cruelty of poultry slaughter has increased in recent years because younger and heavier birds with extremely fragile capillaries are processed for the fast food and rotisserie trade, resulting in hemorrhage under electric current, constant torment, shrieking, immobility, and agonizing death.
In 1999, on November 28th, the Washington Post began a four-part series written by Lena Sun and Gabriel Escobar. It was an expose of the poultry industry, describing conditions such as Ralph gave about the treatment of the chickens and also the treatment of the workers. The articles focused on Delmarva. Delmarva is an area in Maryland and Virginia and Delaware. There were a dozen slaughterhouses on the coasts of the eastern shoreline with Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. 60 million pounds of chickens were processed there in 1999. Tyson Foods owned two plants in Delmarva. Purdue Farms, based in Salisbury, Maryland, had five processing plants in the area. And then there are lesser-known companies such as Monterre Farms, Allen Farm Foods, and Townsend, Inc. The modern chicken industry was born in Delmarva, and now the region is the country's fifth largest poultry producer, selling primarily to the Northeast in places such as New York City. What you're dealing with is cost per pound per man hour, boiled down to a thousandth of a cent, said Jerry Burrow, a business agent for the United Food and Commercial Workers, which represents six of the peninsula's 12 plants. Line speed is regulated only by the Department of Agriculture, and that is for monitoring the speed of the monitoring of the food, the chickens, not for the workers' strain. And the limits are set to give inspectors time to check the birds for disease or contamination. But as we have said before, the disease and the contamination still is in the food chain. You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. Our program today, A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. The kill line, to go back to Delmarva and the poultry industry, because remember, of the in 1997, when there were 8 billion animals slaughtered in the United States, 7 billion of them, 7/8, were poultry. And now the figure is up to 10 billion, so we can imagine that it's about 8.5 billion chickens are killed every year. The kill line at Fraser's plants are 210 birds a minute. This means workers must grab and hang 21 to 23 chickens a minute. Ralph?
And that torment of the workers parallels the unspeakable, barbarous treatment of the animals themselves. The transformation of animals into food is a process out of hell. Indeed, if we take it animal by animal, the pig, when they are held in 8 to 6 square feet per pig, and the sows are in tiny cages so narrow that they can't even turn around. They live over metal grates, and their waste is pushed through slats beneath them into huge pits. While pregnant for 16 weeks, mother pigs are kept in gestation crates and stalls where they do not have room to turn around. After the piglets are born, they moved into a farrowing crate or strait where they still cannot turn around or move. Once the piglets are weaned, if the mother pig is not slaughtered, she is given a short period of brief movement and is reimpregnated and put back into the gestation stall. They never receive more room to move. In the U.S., virtually all farmed birds are raised in factory farms. Under these crowded and stressful conditions, chickens peck at each other. And to combat this, as I mentioned before, the workers cut off two-thirds of their beaks with a hot knife, causing severe pain. The birds cannot eat after debeaking and starve. In poorly ventilated buildings, manure fumes exacerbate respiratory infections, cause eye infections and other damage. Dust and gases accumulate at concentrations that overwhelm not only the animals to whom it is invariably fatal, but the human workers themselves. Up to 6 egg-laying hens live in a battery cage with a wire floor area of 1.7 square feet. These conditions cause lameness, bone brittleness, osteoporosis, and muscle dissipation. With increased knowledge of the behavior and cognitive abilities of the chicken, reports Dr. Leslie Rogers in The Development of Brain and Behavior in the Chicken, in his book in 1995, comes the realization that the chicken is not an inferior species, but is a cognizant and cognitive creature experiencing both emotion and pain. In 1888, The average hen laid 100 eggs per year. In 1998, it was 256. At the end of their laying cycle, the U.S. hens are slaughtered or force-molted by removing food and water for days to shock their bodies into another laying cycle. Once the flock's production goes down, they get rid of the hens. They are not saleable for meat, so no care is used in removing them from their cages. The claws have grown around the wires. They are ripped out. They are gassed in huge barrels. They are removed with clippers. 30,000 hens alive, forced into wood chippers. Egg-laying hatcheries have no use for the male chicks. They are killed by suffocation in plastic bags, decapitation, gassing, and crushing. Broiler chickens now raised for meat grow so rapidly that the heart and lungs are not developed enough to support the remainder of the body. And so it goes. People are led to believe that they do not hurt cows by drinking their milk. When you learn what is done to the udder and how, in fact, the milk is forced from the cow, you get a very different understanding. Indeed, dairy cows have to nurse their young. 1/3 of male calves are slaughtered immediately. 40% are raised for special feed. These calves are kept in individual stalls, chained by the neck, for 20 weeks at a time without being able to move and before they are slaughtered.
Ralph, veal, a cruel meal. It was published by animal rights people in Britain, but it describes in tragic detail the life of the young cow. The veal calf industry, they state, is one of the most reprehensible of all the kinds of intensive animal agriculture. Veal calves are a byproduct of the dairy industry. They are manufactured by milk machines, that is, the dairy cows. The male calves, as you said, are taken from their mothers shortly after birth. Some are slaughtered soon after birth for bob veal, and others are raised in open pens, a kind of minimum security prison. But even they are chained. But for the most part, the young male calves are destined for the veal crate. The veal crate is a wooden restraining device that is the calf's permanent home. It's only 22 inches by 54 inches, so small that the calves, as they grow, cannot turn around or even lie down and stretch. It's the ultimate in high-profit confinement animal agriculture. It is designed to prevent movement and exercise. The crate does its job by atrophying the calf's muscles, because then the tender gourmet veal, is produced. The calves are chained around their neck. They cannot groom themselves even with their tongues, which is the normal animal habit. They have can only move a few inches back and forth. So if they do want to lie down, they have to contort their bodies. And as they grow, they cannot even do that. The calves are kept in darkness except for 20 minutes three times a day when they are fed. Now, this is three times a day, but a normal calf would suckle its mother 16 times a day. The calves are fed a milk substitute that's intentionally lacking in iron and other essential nutrients. Keeps the animal anemic, so to create the pale pink or white color that is so desired in gourmet veal. Craving iron, the animals lick their urine-saturated slats and any metallic parts of the stalls. But farmers withhold water from the animals, who are always thirsty, so that they'll drink large quantities of the high-fat liquid feed. These young calves are in chronic stress, and so also because of the restricted diet and the unhealthy living conditions, they're susceptible to a long list of diseases, pneumonia and constant diarrhea. Thus, they're given massive doses of antibiotics and other drugs just to keep them alive. Their fate, when they reach 350 pounds, which is about 14 weeks after birth, they are slaughtered. Ralph?
What about fish? Most fish are long-lived, have complicated nervous systems, and are capable of learning complicated tasks. This is a quote from the textbook of medical physiology of Guyman and Halls in 1996. The tower regions of the brain, which all vertebrates have, are important in the appreciation of the suffering, all types of pain, because these animals, with their brains sectioned above the misencephalon to block pain signals reaching the cerebrum, evince undeniable evidence of suffering when any part of the body is traumatized. Billions of these creatures are asphyxiated with hooks ripping their throats and their intestines, with nets that strangle them in agony. And each year, over 300,000 dolphins and other marine animals snagged in fishing nets die as these floating nets ensnare them across oceans. The slaughter and the butchery of fish is no less replete with pain and suffering.
Ralph, the result of the 300,000 whales, dolphins, and porpoises that are caught in the fishing nets, the study can be read on the website of the World Wildlife Fund. That's www.panda.org. And they give a comprehensive study that shows not only the death of these fish, but the destruction of the species that is taking place from the purse seines, the long lines, the ghost nets, the gill nets, the drift nets, the pair trawling, and other means of fishing. The cetacean species that are risking extinction are the Bahi or Chinese river dolphin, the common dolphin, the false killer whale, the harbor porpoise, Hector's dolphin, Iriadoid dolphin, Maui's dolphin, northern right whale, sei whale, sperm whale, spinner dolphin, spotted dolphin, Tuxi, and Vaquita. And I recommend that everyone look at this, the extinction of species through the fishing industry. As many as 7 million dolphins died with the original purse seine nets in the since the 1950s.
Well, now, in relating the consequences in terms of sheer savage cruelty and torment for hundreds of millions, indeed billions, of living creatures, which is the way in which Homo sapiens subsists in an era of class society, of production for profit, and of the corporatization and capitalization and commoditization of the health industry and of the pharmaceutical industry. It's essential that we also understand the nature and inherent structure of Homo sapiens as an animal and as a creature, because Homo sapiens, human beings like all other primates, have the physiological structure predominantly of herbivores. We do not have ripping teeth, we have grinding teeth. We lack the hydrochloric acid in the intestine and in the gut to break down bone and flesh. But above all, we have long, 25-foot-long, 26-foot-long intestines compared to the short intestines, the short gut of meat-eating creatures. And there's a very fundamental reason for this. When flesh dies, when it is no longer oxygenated, it putrefies, it becomes carrion. You understand that when a corpse is created and is no longer oxygenated, it proceeds to decay. It has to be put underground, or you have to put formaldehyde on it, because it immediately begins to putrefy and to rot and to generate high rate production of toxins. You can color it, you can dye it, you can do this to that to it, but it is a putrefying mass of decaying flesh. And with our long intestines, what happens is this. We house the decaying flesh in our transverse colon, in our descending colon, pockets of putrefying flesh. The waste is 8%. 8% of human waste, sometimes as much as 10%. And these pockets of putrefying, decaying waste are housed in our gut, in our intestines, in our colon, not for days, but for weeks and for months and for years, flooding the system with toxins. And as a consequence, the detoxifying organs of the body, the kidney and the liver, are overstressed and overworked, and they become 80% and 70% and 60% efficient. And now, as toxins permeate the cell structure of the body, the immune system is overwhelmed. And normally, processes such as the metastasizing in cells, which are regulated by white blood cells and by other mechanisms of the body, no longer are able to be detained or restrained by the functioning of a weakened immune system, and systemic disease becomes endemic. We are primates. Our structure is that of herbivores, meat-eating creatures, or carnivores of very short intestines, because when they kill prey, and it's fresh prey, and it's consumed immediately, it's evacuated immediately, and the structure of the colon is such that it is expelled without the requirement of fiber. The structure of the primate colon is entirely different and requires fiber in order to expel, and as a consequence, whereas in a meat-eating animal the elimination is immediate, in an herbivore the retention of decaying flesh toxifies the system on a permanent basis. Homo sapiens, for various social reasons and historical reasons which have to do with the ownership of property, with the structure of power and ownership through institutionalized possession, consume animals, possess animals, and torment animals, but at a cost to the health of the species that is incalculable.
Ralph, in 1988, the U.S. Surgeon General published a report on nutrition and health, in which the Surgeon General stated that 70% of, or 1.5 million of the 2.1 million deaths in the United States in 1987 were directly associated, these diseases, particularly with diet. Diets high in saturated fat and cholesterol from the eating of meat. Now, this is 1988. Now, there are 2.4 million deaths in the United States in 1999. Cardiovascular operations, 5.8 million in 1999. The U.S. has the primary cause of death are these cardio related to heart disease, and the second is cancer, such that now U.S. males have a 1 in 2 probability, according to the Almanac, of developing invasive cancer at some time in his life, and women have a 1 in 3 chance of developing cancer. Now, there was a big shift from eating beets after the Surgeon General's report, despite all the ads for eat beef, and a switch to chicken. But a study by the National Cancer Institute showed that oven-broiled, pan-fried, or grilled barbecue chicken carries an even bigger load of carcinogens than does red meat. And the more you cook it, the worse it gets. A well-done hamburger itself contains a big dose of carcinogens, 33 nanograms per gram of the carcinogen PHIP, and a well-done steak has 30 nanograms per gram. But grilled chicken reached 480 nanograms per gram. And also, the cholesterol content of beef and chicken is actually the same, and their fat content is not much different.
Well, what indeed is involved here is not only the inappropriateness of flesh, decaying carrion, as a suitable food for Homo sapiens, but it is as well the ways in which the food supply is provided, because we get it at one remove. As Dick Gregory likes to say, I've never met a cow that ate a steak. The animals that we torment and consume, whether they're pigs or chickens or cows or horses, are themselves herbivores. herbivores. They are creatures that are gaining their nutrition from the consumption of grasses and grains and roots. And so we indeed depend upon their processing of these to get them at one remove, and they're not suited to our particular physiology or structure. It is endemic and systemic disease that is the consequence for Homo sapiens. And not only is it a consequence of eating the flesh, but the factory and the capitalist system through which this becomes huge industrial production requires destruction of the food chain on a planetary scale. All of the arable land that would be suitable for the production of self-sustaining agriculture is now, for the most part, given over to production for the animal chain. Indeed, grains are no longer grown primarily for human consumption, but are used as animal feed, and the animals themselves, a system for which profit is the primary motive, are then produced as food in the manner that we have described. And it is no less true for dairy. What is not generally understood is that the enzyme for metabolizing lactose is possessed by a few tribes and peoples on the planet. Most Homo sapiens, most human beings are unable to metabolize lactose. And the structure, the molecular structure of the milk of a cow, which is suitable to an animal of a half ton, is wholly unsuited to Homo sapiens, which as a consequence, what the fat, the saturated fat, and the casein of dairy products produces is mucus, congestion, indigestion, and systemic disease, respiratory ailments on a huge scale. And the dairy industry, which is itself an enormous engine of profit, pumps propaganda and perpetual production that's subsidized by the state for milk production and cheese production, which is not necessary to the sustaining of human life, but on the contrary is antithetical to it.
Ralph, in fact, in 1978, the dairy industry ranked only second to the American Medical Association in donations to congressional campaigns, according to Common Cause. Now, you mentioned the where nutrition knowledge is derived, and it's interesting because it was with the National Dairy Council, which was formed in 1915 to provide educational materials, and by 1941 was funding the research at the universities about nutrition and provided the curriculum kits to schools and held workshops to train teachers about nutrition and to promote milk products. And what the government, the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, it set a minimum price for milk and then bought what the farmers couldn't sell to the public for that price, a full subsidy. These leftovers were provided to the USDA as butter, American cheese, non-fat dry milk, which was distributed to schools, military, prisons, to the poor under the welfare programs, and now is sent overseas to other nations where people are lactose intolerant as well. That is, they don't have the enzyme to break down the milk sugar. It is provided as non-fat milk and sent abroad.
And the primary byproduct of the milk and the cheese and the dairy products, which is the ingredient called casein, is what is used in Elmer's glue. It clogs up your arteries, it clogs up your respiratory tract, and it clogs up your gut no less than it does the glue that is produced by Elmer.
You have been listening to Taking Aim. Ralph, would you like to conclude at
well,
the last
Maya,
moment?
Well, we're going to be covering the corporate profit and the testing on animals in our part two of this program. But it should be understood that people who eat meat are 40% more likely to die of heart attack, 50% more likely to obtain cancer, systemic diseases including stroke, obesity, appendicitis, osteoporosis, arthritis, diabetes, and food poisoning. poisoning. The accumulation of pesticides and chemicals is 14 times more concentrated than those in any plant food. Factory farms leave behind an environmental toll that generations will be forced to address. Raising animals for food requires more than half the water used in the United States, one-third of all raw materials, including fossil fuels. The meat industry is the single greatest polluter of waterways, directly responsible for 85% of soil erosion in the United States. The meat addiction, poisoning, depleting land, water, and air. 26 billion animals killed for food every year in this country, four times the human population of the planet. It is not just the suffering. It is not just the endemic disease. It is the destruction of whole populations across the planet, dependent on a mode of production that has nothing to do with nutrition, everything to do with exploitation, which generates a health crisis that fuels a pharmaceutical industry that is addicted to the production of toxic products that further poison the victim species. We are our own worst enemies, brothers and sisters, in this slaughter and in this torment of other species. And as the dreaded comparison so eloquently points out, every rationalization for the enslavement of human beings, every denial of their humanity, every insistence that they do not feel, that they do not think, that they do not suffer, that they are not capable of the same responses as their tormentors, is the rationale for the destruction of other species. It is the engine that fuels the drive for profit. It is the torment of animals that visits itself again on its perpetrators. It is inextricably linked to the struggle for emancipation from exploitation, from abuse, from cruelty, and from oppression.
A vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We would like to thank Michael Yoshida, our engineer here at KPFA, and Matthew Finch, engineering at WBAI. Also, Bradley Wiedmeyer, our associate. We'll be with you next week.